The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I'm Matt Miller.
I'm Hannah Elliott, and this is Hot Pursuit.
All right, we have a very special guest today.
Very special.
I'm really looking forward to talking to Gunter Steiner of Formula One fame. He just left the Haas team in, I think, what was shocking to a lot of F1 fans. Is that fair to say?
He's beloved. Yes. I mean, he really is a beloved figure on Drive to Survive, and I think we all were surprised when he left Haas, but he's got something new that he's going to tell us about, a new endeavor.
Exactly.
So I'm very excited to talk to him.
Yeah, me too. I'm pumped to talk to him, and I've just binged Drive to Survive, so it's extra special for me. We're also going to talk a little bit about some cars that we're driving, just a little, because you have a story that's come out on a supercar, plus you're driving a new
E-Class.
Yeah, I was going to
say. A new Mercedes.
Is it a luxury sedan, a family car?
Yes.
I would say
it's the mid-size luxury sedan from Mercedes, right above the C-Class and below the S-Class.
Right. Well, that's exactly what it is. But I was just like,
yes.
Compared to the McLaren that you drove, which is a supercar, right? And this is like
more mass. This is a bit more mass. Let's put it that way. This one does not cost $345,000.
Right. And I was I had an EV last week, which I'm not too excited about it.
I want to dive into it because your impressions only support my impressions that I had of the same EV.
All right. So we'll get to all that after our interview with Gunter Steiner. And I just want to remind you, before we go to Gunter, please email us with any thoughts or questions. Our email address is
hotpursuit@bloomberg.net. That's hotpursuit@bloomberg.net.
We got a great email last week. Somebody said, hey, where's the love for Audi? We need to be talking more about Audis.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yes. We are equal opportunity, of course. And, Audi, reach out to us. I was in touch with Mark last week. Great guy, great company. Give us something to talk about.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have a special place in my heart because the first new car I ever bought with my own money, or the first any car I ever bought with my own money, was an Audi A4 Avant, the 2.5 TDI in 2000. Yeah, it was awesome. I loved it so much. But anyway, let's get to Gunter Steiner first, and then we're going to talk cars after that. Without further ado, this is our interview.
I guess really what I want to ask first is, how's life post Formula One, and how is life post being filmed all the time for, Drive to Survive?
First of all, it's not post because I was back in Bahrain already in the paddock, doing some TV work. So people said, oh, it's nice to have you back. I said, I was never gone because, I'm back here now and did some work for that. And then I didn't go to Saudi. I was in Australia. I just came back 2 days ago. And then my next race is Miami, where I'm an ambassador for. So I'm still keeping busy in F1. And I'm enjoying it. It's actually pretty good to do something different.
Let's get your
take on
the races. Like, how do you think it's gone so far? What are your expectations for the Miami GP?
I think so far it has gone good. I think Formula One is in a good place in general, you know. So obviously, after the first two races, a lot of people said, "Oh, is this Max dominating everything?" And it was difficult to say no, he's not, because he was clearly dominating the first two. But then in Melbourne last weekend, I wouldn't say he was dominating. He had pole position. Obviously, in the race, he stopped. But the Ferraris were very good on Friday and Saturday. I looked at his lap, in-car camera, his quali lap. It was the perfect lap. I mean, the guy did a fantastic job. I mean, he has obviously the best car in the moment. But the pace of the Ferraris in the long run was actually very good already on Friday. So him dropping out took that thing away. But I think Sainz would have won even if Max would have stayed there. We will never know if and would don't do anything. But he didn't win. So I think Formula 1 is in a good place. And now we have to see the next races. If Ferrari can keep the pressure onto the Red Bull, that for sure would make it a lot better racing. And I look really forward to Miami. I think Miami is doing a very good job. The short time they are on the calendar is this year is the third year. They started off as the new venue and they just raised the bar of everything in F1, you know, with the entertainment factor, good racing. There is a lot going on this year. There will be the F1 Academy, which is female driving, girls driving, which is very good. There is Porsche Super Cup, and it is a sprint weekend as well. So lots of racing there, and all the other stuff you can get in the Miami race, you know, Mark Anthony for the national anthem. I mean, I hope I can enjoy this year a little bit more what is going on there than before, because before I always had to work really hard. Not that I don't work hard now, you know, I don't want to say that. But anyway, it's for sure it will be a fun weekend for the people which go there.
Gunther, I'm so curious to know, do you think that there could ever be too many F1 races in North America? I mean, now we're at five. Is there ever a point where it kind of dilutes what F1 is trying to do in the US, which is really build a strong fan base?
I think what they're doing now is stabilize the fan base, not putting more events in North America, especially not in the USA. I think the FOM knows that they have to be pacing themselves, you know, because if you put too much on the plate, people choke on it, you know. So, I think in the moment, three races is a good number, but it needs to be stabilized. And obviously, the last years, it was a rapid rise in viewership and attendance. And if too much is put on, then all of a sudden you put some in jeopardy, some of the events, you know, because you cannot get enough people. But FOM knows that, Formula One management, so they're controlling it. But I think within 3 or 5 years, I think we could have even more races, especially in the US, wow. I think, because the US, we never have to forget, there's 350 million people here.
Wait, what do we have now? I know we have Miami, obviously, and COTA, right, in Austin.
Vegas.
Vegas.
And Vegas, of
yeah.
course,
last
yes.
Year
okay.
And then,
how
of course,
forget?
Montreal and Mexico City, too, yeah. In Canada and Mexico.
So where else could we have a race?
I think where we are sitting. Huh?
Yeah,
somewhere
right here.
In the
right
Northeast.
Here.
I think in the Northeast.
That's been tried before.
Yeah.
It never, do you think, I mean, are we going to see, finally?
Like around New Jersey, right?
Do you know
that's where
something
they wanted to
we
do
don't?
It.
Because they've tried it for so long, Gunther.
Yeah, but I think it's just the right people need to come along and do it. I mean, it's the same like they did in Miami. Who would have thought? I mean, I'm in Formula One a long time. 5-6 years ago, you said there are a race in Miami. I said, no, it will not happen. And then an entrepreneur comes along in Stephen Ross and gets his team together with Tom Garfinkel and put a fantastic event on. It's just like to be the right people which want to do it, you know, with a vision, because I think it can be successful. Obviously, as I said before, we need to wait a little bit because otherwise it gets too much. But then I always compare Europe. It's like when you say we've got a race in Silverstone and one in Barcelona, one in Monza. They're a lot closer together than Miami
right.
to Las Vegas, you know, on
You're
the
right.
distance. So there is space for more races here. Just
yes,
like,
but we also have very good British drivers, very good Spanish drivers, and very good Italian drivers. And there hasn't been a good American driver since, like, Mario Andretti, right? I mean, at least no one who's won many races.
You're right. And I think that comes a little bit because it was neglected, Formula One, in the States for a long time. So what did young, aspiring race car drivers do? They tried to make a career here in NASCAR or in IndyCar, which I always say it's actually a good way of making a living racing in the US, because it's a lot less stressful than racing in Formula One, or I call it in Europe. I know it's a global sport, but you need to go through the feeder series in Europe, which is very tough. And, you know, I live in America since 18 years because it's a good life here, to be honest. Otherwise, I wouldn't stay here. You know, I can make a choice. But
I mean, Sudjurol's not bad.
It's not bad at all, but life is pretty good here, you know.
I mean, I would rather live in, you know, Sudjurol than probably
anywhere
on the planet.
Well, the grass is always greener.
But exactly.
The grass is always greener.
That's an issue. Why do you think there aren't any successful...
I was just going to ask that. I know what you're asking.
American
that.
Teams.
Yeah.
I mean, Haas has been fairly successful, but not, you know,
Andretti,
on the podium.
Cadillac.
And I mean, Andretti was 1978,
close.
Right? Was when Mario was racing. And they've now said no to a new Andretti team with Cadillac. Like, it seems like they don't even want American involvement.
No, I don't think it's about wanting or not wanting. It's a very difficult sport, which, and I know Formula One very well. There was an attempt, USF1 in, when was that, 2009, I think, which failed completely. And because it's a very difficult, very difficult sport. And it's like, now the sport has grown so much, so the value of the teams is very high. 5-10 years ago, no American went in to Formula One because it was a loss-making sport. Now, I mean, you still make loss as a team, or a few make profit, a few make loss, but the value of the team is high, so you can, you know, you balance it out with the increase in value of the team. But sometimes I think in the States is underestimated how difficult F1 is, you know, and it's difficult to explain that as well to people. So it cannot be this difficult. Other people do it, yeah. But if you look at the history, it's the same. When if I would say I'm gonna replicate Apple, I mean, it cannot be difficult, huh? Just making cell phones, but try to do it. It's a different story. I mean, it's the same bit. I mean, there is one entrepreneur which in the United States we have to give respect. It's Elon Musk. He said, I'm going to make my own car, and he did. But for anybody going into an industry, a very well-developed industry out of nowhere, especially now, it's very difficult to be successful, and you need a lot of money to do it, you know? And a lot of people run either out of enthusiasm or of money doing it.
Speaking of money, I'm really curious, how has the influx of money from the Middle East really changed the dynamic, you know, just in your experience and in your history? Because we've seen so much involvement, and having just been in Saudi Arabia for that Grand Prix, which was fantastic, has that created a marked difference just in the dynamic of the series?
No, not really. I mean, they've got a title sponsorship of one of the teams, and they're sponsoring some Grand Prix. And obviously, in the Middle East now, I think we have got 5 Grand Prix, which is for a relatively small area, a lot of races. But if FOM would give them more, they would take more. But obviously, we need to stop, because otherwise it's a Middle Eastern championship in F1. So that is not what we want. But then you have to see also the Middle East invest in golf, soccer.
Sure.
It's like
boxing.
Exactly. They do everything down there because they have the finances to do it. So it's something which is normal. But I don't think it has changed the sport in itself. You know, they didn't take control of the sport. It's just like, always money is welcome everywhere.
You know, one of the things I wonder is, what is Formula One right now? I've heard you say numerous times that it's a completely different race than it was 5 years ago. And obviously it's very different than what we do in IndyCar, right? What is Formula One right now? How do you see it?
I see it since Liberty Media took over. They put the sport where it should be, in my opinion, because before it was a racing series with, you know, the highest high-end racing series with participation, but they didn't give it to the masses, you know. And now Liberty Media understood what they need to do with social media, just bringing it to the people. I mean, Liberty Media bought the business, not because they love the sport, because they're an investment company and they want to make it work. And they had a good vision for it. And that's what it is all about. But now it's entertainment, because these days you cannot ask somebody to go to a car race, watch 2 hours a car go around, and then go home. People want more. People want entertainment. And that was Miami brought into Formula One 3 years ago. They raised the bar by bringing entertainment to racing. So it's just like expanding it that people have more. And Formula One on the other side is as well. If you go any other racing, you race on Sunday. On Monday, you get the news who won, who didn't win. And then you wait until the next race comes. In Formula One, in between races, there's always something going on, you know, and a lot of people are interested in that. And that it just feeds us with information and new stuff and
content.
Exactly, content. And that is what people like. And I think it's not only about racing. Racing is the pinnacle of it when you go racing. But then the rest of it is filled with other stuff. It's called BS, which counts a lot.
I'm really curious, you know, Matt's asking, like, can you put F1 in context now versus 5 or 10 years ago? I'm just curious, you know, it also seems like there's a lot of, I don't know, volatility is a word, but there's been a lot of significant...
rule changes?
Well, no, significant things in the news. I'm thinking of Christian Horner. I'm thinking of...
Drama.
Yeah, I don't want to call it drama, but for you guys, people who are in the industry, you're in the paddock, you're in the pit lane, how much of a distraction is that? Or are the media, are we blowing it way out of proportion?
It's all you people, just blowing it up. Everything is all right. Everything is all right. No.
Well.
I think operationally, the teams, they don't suffer. They are so well structured that something like this on the daily operation of running a race team, it has, I wouldn't say no influence because it's always in the back of your head. But for example, the pit stop of Red Bull will not be slower because Christian Horner is in the news. You know, nobody really cares at that moment in time. Obviously, it would be much better if it would be good news than news like we had, you know. I mean, we all can say that. But in the moment, they are not normal, this news. It's one in, you know, in 100 news or 1,000 news, this one, because it's not a nice thing which is said. And I always said that the last 4 weeks, they just need to get an end to, with that drama, or with that soap opera, because it doesn't help anybody, even the people involved. They must be tired of it, because it cannot be nice to make a living. And in the morning, you wake up and you look on the internet and see what they write about you. And for sure, it's nothing good, you know. So I think they need to put an end to it, also for the sake of the sport, because the sport should not focus on that stuff, but should focus on more nice and positive things.
Well, and I imagine you want to also try and bring more women in terms of the teams. You mentioned that they're testing women driving in a series, but do you think more women can get involved? Surely Liberty must want that, because you bring in 100% more consumers.
I think women watching it, it's a lot more than it was 5 years ago. That is the biggest demographic which gained on it. I would say young people and women. But what is done with the F1 Academy, which again is racing in Miami in beginning or in a month's time, roughly.
Yeah, not just testing. It's an actual racing series.
There's a race.
Susie Wolf.
Susie
Wolf is leading it.
Yeah.
Doing a great job.
Exactly. It's a great job. But also there, we need to be patient, because you cannot expect that you put a racing series on and in 2 years we have got a Formula One champion. If you look at that male, how many boys are going karting when they are 6, 7 years old? You know, there are thousands, hundred thousands, millions. And how many girls are going? You know, very few. So to pick out one in a million and to pick out one in 1,000, the chance to find a talent is much bigger in the 1 million. So... And it takes time to grow that. And with the F1 Academy, now there is young females driving. I mean, I think the youngest ones are 17 years old. But can they make it to F1? If nothing special happens, maybe not. But at least gives the young girls, which are now 4, 5, 6 years old, something to look at it. And maybe they start go-karting. Or at least the mums which look at it and have a daughter at home, they can say, hey, you want to go motor racing? And then we increase the talent pool. And at some stage... it will come up there, but at least there is an infrastructure put in place that women can succeed. And I think over time it will happen. But we cannot, the only thing you cannot buy is time. You know, we need to be patient until it happens. And I think there is a lot of, Susie is pushing really hard with the series to make it the best it can. But it's not easy to start a racing series, never mind a racing series for women only in the moment. So it will take some time, but I think we'll get there, because I don't think physically there is an issue a woman driving an F1 car, because they have got power steering. You know, obviously it's physically the G-forces, but you can train them, you know. Normally it shouldn't be a problem for a woman to drive.
Of course,
a car.
And I mean that's something that I think a lot of people are excited about, a female future in Formula One.
I need to ask Gunther: is your daughter involved in cars at all? Does she like cars, or has she totally rejected that world?
Not totally rejected, but she's doing her driving license in the moment. And when I see her driving, I don't want to see her in a racing car, you know, because she's going to hurt herself. No, she's not into drive a racing car. So, you know, I never push that one as well, because one in the family is enough.
Yeah. I'm sure it's like if your father is a priest, then you're not likely to go to church very much.
I can speak from experience on that. Yes. True. My dad's a minister.
Yes. So it'll be cool if we can get more women involved in in the garage, and then eventually, hopefully, on the circuit. One thing I'm not really looking forward to is an electric future. When I go to the races, or when I watch, you know, F1 or MotoGP, it's the sound that gives me a lot of the feeling. And the electric driving experience, I just had an EV at my house for a week to test out as a journalist. And I opted for, I'd rather drive my wife's
name
minivan.
Names, Matt. Name names. Which EV was it?
I had the Cadillac Lyric at my house, which is a cool looking design. And it's obviously it's fast because it's an EV. A lot of torque, you know, but doesn't move me in my soul. No, thank you.
The car has no soul.
Yeah. I was interviewing Nico Rosberg a couple years ago. I went to see the Formula E in Berlin, and just not that much fun. Is there a future there?
I would say the future of moving around is not only EVs. And Formula One, I think, in my future, will not be going electric completely. I mean, in 2026, there is a bigger element of electric involved.
But hybrid?
It's hybrid now, but a bigger element of electric involved from now on. But it will never be completely like that. It will have a combustion engine in it, or some kind of combustion. Because as you say, the sound is a third dimension. I mean, it's the smell, the sound, it's a lot of it. And a lot of people like it. I think EVs have got their place in society and on the road, in my opinion. But I don't think it will be totally EV in 5 or 10 years. I mean, we will have alternative vehicles, hybrids, alternative fuels which are developed, you know, renewable fuels, zero emission fuels. There will be a lot of stuff out there which is being developed by now. And Formula One, what is done in Formula One, because there is so much money for R&D, like developing a synthetic fuel or something which doesn't pollute, it's on the way and it will be there. It's just that from Formula One, we need to get it in to industrialize that. You can have a combustion engine car, but with a fuel which doesn't pollute. You know, that would be, because I think there's a lot of people like, I think we all three agree on it, a combustion engine is still a cool thing, you know. Even if an electric engine, as you say, has got lots of torque and is also nice to drive, you're just missing out on some of the feeling when you drive the car. It's like, I don't know what it is, but I'm the same. I mean, I can drive an EV, but it doesn't excite me.
Yeah.
Gunther, what do you drive in your personal life?
I wanted to ask.
Do you collect
thing.
Cars at all, or
I've only seen you driving a jet ski and
I've got. What do you drive in North Carolina? What do you think?
Pickup truck.
You got that one right. A Toyota Tundra.
Okay.
Interesting. So, yes. But not a Ford
what
or a
color?
GM. That's interesting.
Toyota Tundra. I always said Toyota. It's a good car, and I like it. You know.
Yeah.
When in Rome, behave like a Roman.
But what about other? I mean, you must have grown up loving cars. I've seen you driving around with Mattia in like a Fiat 500. What rings your bell in terms of automobiles? What are you into?
I mean, I like nice cars, but you know, I didn't have a lot of time. You know, when you've got a nice car, you need to enjoy it. And having a car just parked in the garage, it's no point to have it, you know. But I had Porsches, you know, before when I lived in England. But when I live here, I quite like my pickup truck, you know. It takes me everywhere. It has got good power. What more you want? I mean, the cabin is as big as my living room back in Italy, you know. So that's what I want here. So I don't have a big car or a sports car here or anything. If I would live in Europe, maybe I would have a little bit a sportier car, but... I'm perfectly happy with my pickup truck.
I get it.
I want to take it back to Formula One and specifically Drive to Survive, Gunther, because I think that is how a lot of us, you know, really got to know you and really come to like you. And I'm just curious, can you give us a sense of what that was like? Was it annoying to be filmed doing your job when you have very real stakes on the line, or was it fun? How did it affect you on, you know, a daily and weekly basis?
It didn't affect me at all, because what obviously, when we started this thing off, nobody knew what we were going to do. I didn't know what came out at the end. You know, so you were just filmed doing your job. That's how I felt it. They put the mic on and then the job was done from the other one. I didn't have to behave or did anything different. I didn't stage anything. The only thing we had to do was sit down interviews. That was it. And then that is one of the reasons why I didn't watch it, or I didn't watch any of it afterwards, because I didn't want to see myself and maybe... I wouldn't say critique myself or try to do better, because I'm not an actor, you know, that's not my job, you know. So, but if you see yourself, you say, oh, I could do this better. And then all of a sudden, every time you see a camera, I would feel pressure to not be me, but to start acting. And I didn't want to get in that position, so I decided not to watch it.
I'll tell you, I just binged all of it. And I much prefer to see you
interview than
Toto and Christian. No offense to them, but let me finally ask about...
I'm really curious. I have a follow-up on that. I just want to say, you know, a lot of people, when they heard I was going to be talking with you, they said, ask Gunther if he has advice for people who are going through challenges at work.
How do you stay positive? Because you're always like, it has to turn out well.
I always stay positive. I mean, in life, you've got always elements of negativity, and you have to deal with them, but try to do things you think you do right and you enjoy to do. And sometimes things don't work out like you want to be, but you have to live it. At some stage, you need to see if you cannot be happy what you do at work, you need to start to consider to change work or something. You know, it's you need to make the tough decision. But normally, for me, it's like in the morning, you get up, you've got maybe five things to do you don't really want to do, and they take you down. They are negative, but there's always some silver lining somewhere. But what I never do, I never procrastinate anything. If it is good or bad, just get it done. Because the worst thing for me is something what you don't like to do, or something which is negative, to procrastinate, because it doesn't go away. It will stay there. I learned that one. For me, I hate to do it, but I'm still going to do it. And that makes me happy then, because I did it. And, you know, you do your best, and sometimes your best is not enough. That can happen to anybody. And I think anybody can live with that and doesn't need to be getting concerned about that. It happens to anybody. But for me, it's like, good or bad, just deal with it. You know, get done. Be proactive to sort your problems out. Because if you just let them lay there, they take over your life. And I think then you're in a bad place. So just try to make the best out of it and deal with it and take it off the table. And if something doesn't work, just do something different.
All right. I just want to ask, finally, what's ahead for you? I mean, I know you have your company, but it seems like other people run that for you. And then you've got the Miami GP, but that's only once a year. So what are you going to achieve right now?
Wine.
What's your goal?
Yeah, exactly. You said it right, Hannah. Just enjoy life. You know, drink a lot of wine now. This year, it was very strange when it was announced that I'm not at Haas anymore. I got a lot of interest for me doing things. And I was like, I'm not saying yes or no. I just see what happens here. And it kept on coming. So I'm fortunate to do things I like to do, because I know I can be, let's call it good, at least what I think is good at it. I don't need to do something tomorrow. So I picked a few things which I want to do. Like I do some TV work for German TV, for RTL. I did something in Australia. I do the Miami ambassador role, because I believe in what is done there. You know, that they have got a vision and they won't come to the end of it. But for the rest, the bigger picture, I wait a little. I'm pretty happy. And if I don't work for a year, I wasn't worried before. I just picked the things I want to do in the moment. Is something coming up with a team or something? Can I take a job again? Yes, but I'm not desperately into running a team. If I'm going to run a team again, I would like, or I want, it needs to be with the vision that I can achieve what I couldn't achieve with Haas, which is going forward, because I always had one arm behind my back. You know, I tried to fight with the big boys, but never was given the tools to fight with them. So I, how should I do it? I'm no genius. I can work hard and do my best. But if you don't have the basis of it, you cannot do it. So if something comes along which interests me and is challenging and with the vision, the biggest thing is the vision must be podium, nothing else.
Excellent. Well, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming
thank
in.
Thank you so much. Really a pleasure, Gunther. And we wish you the best in your next endeavors and in Miami.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks for having me.
I love how positive he is. I think he can inspire us all when we're sort of facing challenges at work, thinking, what am I doing? Nothing's going right. I mean, we all watched in real time as he dealt with adversity, to say the least. And he kind of did it with a bit of a joie de vivre.
Yes.
So I think we can support that for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of the series, right? Toto and Christian are always like at war, and they both seem like a little bit evil. Whereas Gunther, even though he's dropping an F-bomb like literally every 26 seconds.
I can't believe he didn't on our podcast.
I think that was the longest he's ever gone. But he seems so positive. And there's one scene in, like, I don't know, season 3 or season 4, where he's sitting on like a lounge chair with his wife, and he's like, but it's got to turn out well. And she's like, yeah, of course it's going to turn out well. Like, there's no other option for them other than it working out in the end, right?
Well, you know what? They have each other. They have their daughter. They have their beautiful life in North Carolina. Gunther, of course, has other businesses completely separate from Formula One. So, yeah, he's going to be just fine. And I do have to say, just a note, there are plenty of fans that I know that will really be disappointed to hear Toto Wolff described as evil, because a lot of my girlfriends have major crushes on him. So I will defend him because I have interviewed him. He's a nice person. I'm a big fan of Susie, his wife. And I've got a couple girlfriends who, no disrespect to Susie, but if Toto were a single man, they would be interested.
I mean, I didn't mean to say that he and Toto were like in real life evil. I'm just saying in the series, they're kind of like the bad guys, right? Because they're at each other's throats all the time. They're pulling like dirty tricks to try and win. And they're on top. So if you have Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton and you've won, like, I don't know how many, 7 world championships does Lewis have, right? So then people can root against you. So you're the bad guy, kind of.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk a little bit about the cars that you've been driving. You just had a story come out on McLaren. Even though they're not good at Formula One racing, they make...
But Zach Brown is well-liked, speaking of team principals.
True, he's a cool principal. And Mattia Binotto was a cool principal.
Sure.
And there are other like good guys there. Anyone who doesn't win all the time is the good guy, right?
Everyone loves an underdog.
But they make kind of like these... precision instruments.
Clinical.
Clinical vehicles.
Very clinical.
But amazing still, right? I mean, you what were you in? The McLaren 750S?
Yes. Yeah, so I was actually in the 750S Spider, which, to be fair, I myself didn't even realize it was a Spider version until I got inside. It's really difficult to tell the Spider separate from just the 750S if the roof is up. And the day that I drove this car was really rainy the entire day. So in all disclosure, I didn't take the roof down. There's hardly any difference. But at least the Spider does have this hard top that you can take down in 11 seconds at speeds up to 31 miles an hour. And we should say the 750S family is the successor to the 720S. And this is the most powerful, lightest series production McLaren available right now. If you want something, the Spider starts at $345,000. If you want something that looks like a supercar that just screams to everyone, I've bought a supercar, this could be the car for you.
Yeah, I don't think I would. If I had that much money, there's so many other cars I would buy first. And I'm not saying that it's a bad car. I'm sure it's probably one of the best cars. But it just doesn't, like we were talking about in terms of electric cars, right? It just doesn't seem to have as much of a soul.
Yeah, you know, McLaren does have a type of person who really loves it because it is very analytical, very clinical, very unadorned in a way. It's pure speed. Everything about the car is oriented toward adding lightness, as they say. So it's kind of perfect on paper, but you're right. There's something left. There's not a lot of drama behind the steering wheel. There's not a lot of soul. And when you talk about price, you know, considering that you could probably get a Ferrari 296 GTS for almost the same price, then it starts to make you question, well, do you want a McLaren or do you want a Ferrari? Those are two pretty different propositions. They're pretty competitive. The Ferrari, you know, is a little more expensive, has more horsepower, is a hybrid, but, you know, speed wise, they're neck and neck.
Yeah, I think I would either save my money for something else or buy many of something else. But just to remind people of two things, I want to remind people of two things. Number one, you can email us your thoughts on McLaren. What would you buy
if you
had $400,000? And, you know, or would you not buy any of those supercars, McLaren, Ferrari, Lamborghini, and just look for something that's like 50 grand on BAT? Our email is hotpursuit@bloomberg.net, and we do really appreciate your thoughts, and we'll share your thoughts also with the rest of our listeners. On that note, right, we were talking about the guy who said no love for Audi, and I was saying that my first car purchase ever that I made was an Audi A4 in 2000. It was the TDI, which I loved, 180 horsepower, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it was
nice.
Enough to get to 200 kilometers on the Autobahn pretty much any time. Plus, it was a stick shift wagon. Really
That's
perfect
all you
car.
Need.
But they're making some awesome cars that we really need to drive. I recently drove the SQ7, which I also really loved, even though it looks like a blob of an SUV, like there's no styling involved from the exterior. Mm-hmm. The interior is an amazing place to be, and the motor, the power plant, is just awesome. So,
yeah, and I like the e-tron range, actually. I thought what they are doing with the e-trons, the electric range, is competitive. Absolutely, and looks way better than Tesla, Lucid, Rivian.
And they're going to be coming out with more, right? There's going to be a Q6 that I'm excited to see. There's going to be a Q9 that I'm really excited to see. You know, in terms of EVs, I think they make some of the most exciting EVs out there so far.
Agree.
So far, I'm loving the BMW EVs, but I did love the e-tron as well, and I'm excited to get deeper into Audi, and I think they're going to be coming out with more exciting stuff. The other thing I wanted to remind people about is where they can read your McLaren story. Where can people, what's the easiest place to get your content, Hannah?
So just go to Bloomberg.com and look under Pursuits, or just Google Bloomberg Hannah Elliott, and then whatever you want to read about, whatever car you want to read about. You can search it online. You can also follow me on Instagram, Hannah Elliott XO. You know, just Google the car and Google Bloomberg and Hannah Elliott, and the car, whatever car you want to read about, should pop right up.
All right. Now, I did want to talk a little bit about the Cadillac that I drove. And
let's get into it.
It's kind of a disappointment to me because Cadillac makes what is, to me, one of the best and most exciting new cars you can buy with any amount of money today, and that is the CTS 5 Blackwing. Is that it? CTV 5 Blackwing? I can never remember.
They've already got a big problem if you love the car so much and you can't even remember what it's called.
The Blackwing
is a huge problem.
The Blackwing is, I think, one of the best cars out there that any money could buy. I probably would rather have a CT5V Blackwing than a McLaren 750S if they were the same money, because it's just an absolute sledgehammer in a beautifully styled handling sports car. And it's just...
Yes, we've already established this. We've discussed. I want to talk about your opinion of the Lyriq, because this is new ground.
So last week I had the Lyriq, and I was pretty excited about test driving it because I like the styling. It's kind of weird looking. You know, it's got that bread van look in the back. Could have been like an old Maserati in the sense that it has that greenhouse in the rear.
Yes.
And
it's almost a hatchback-ish.
And because I've been so impressed with Cadillac products lately, the CTV4 I also drove recently, and I absolutely loved it. I don't think
loved
they could improve
Escalade
on it.
Too.
Yeah.
Love an Escalade.
Exactly. The Escalade, even if it's not the supercharged 6.2, like, it's just an amazingly luxurious vehicle. And the electric version that's coming out, we both saw.
Can't wait to drive it.
Yeah, I can't wait to drive it. It's going to be very expensive, but it's awesome, right? I can't say that about the Lyriq. I drove the Cadillac Lyriq Sport 3 with SC, whatever that means. I had to dig, like, deep into the menu before I could get it into sport mode. It just had zero soul when I was trying to wring it out a little bit on the Sprainbrook Parkway. Like, it just didn't excite me in any way possible.
Yeah.
And it should, because I love station wagons and I love Cadillac products. But, you know, for $77,000, which is
I
how
I was going
to
ask.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can get into it.
I was Googling furiously to find the price.
You can get into it for less, but the one that I had, the way it was equipped, was $77,000. And let's be honest, you're not going to get a stripper version of any of these cars, right? So you're going to put on some options. It's just a high price to ask for a soulless vehicle.
It doesn't feel special.
Not at
all. I do agree for that price. Whatever the thing needs to feel a little special or a little bit like it's a treat that you've rewarded yourself with, or that you look forward to every morning, or that you look back at when you get out of at the end of the day, and this vehicle doesn't have it. Did you notice the range at all, Matt? I mean,
I don't really pay much attention to that because I only have these cars for a week. So
yeah,
they all get over 200 miles, and I always like to charge them myself as an experiment. I feel like it's kind of part of my job to see what it's like to charge an EV. It isn't very pleasant. It's not horrible these days, but that's because I expect it to take a half hour to 45 minutes, and it does if I get there on time. Or if you leave it plugged in overnight, it charges at your house. I don't pay that much attention. I feel like General Motors in general does a much better job at range than almost anybody else. Like, this is a place where Audi disappoints me, right? I remember the first time I drove an e-tron, I was in love with the thing. It was like magic carpet ride of torque. This was back at, you know, 5-6 years ago at the beginning of EVs, and I was so blown away by that. And then I was so disappointed by the range because I couldn't even get like 180 kilometers out of it, which
that's
is
a big deal. Yeah, that is a big deal.
But GM has mastered that by putting giant batteries. I don't know what the Lyriq Sport 3 has in terms of capacity, but you know, the truck, the Silverado EV and the Escalade EQ or whatever they're calling it, those things get like well over 300 miles in range because they have like 210 kilowatt hour batteries.
Right. When I drove it, a couple of years ago, they were saying 310, 312 miles. Obviously, that's not real real world miles, because everything's going to degrade the battery a little bit, the duration a little bit. But yeah, I mean, that's more than competitive for sure. My thing is, I just don't know. It just is missing something. It doesn't feel, you know, I'm not an engineer. Are they using components from, you know, I feel like it's they've pulled things from the parts bin to make this car, and it doesn't feel unique. And
it doesn't feel like they've gone as far as they have with a lot of their ICE vehicles, you know, because
they
pulled all the stops for the CTV, four and five.
Right.
And it doesn't feel like they did for this. By the way, it's the EPA rating is 307 miles of range, which is great.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And charge time at home, 6.7 hours. That's like normal.
Yeah, that's fine.
Good to normal. But they missed the mark on so many other levels of this vehicle that I don't care anymore about range.
And they've already had a lot of delays. You know, production has been delayed on this repeatedly. It's not doing well. And obviously, components have been an issue, and logistics.
Well, and Ultium
in the production
has
line.
Been a problematic.
Yes. So it just is. It's a miss. It's a miss.
True. But so many hits. So.
So many.
If anybody from Cadillac is listening and you have a CT5V Blackwing that you want me to try out, I will.
Well,
and please keep making them. Right? The
I
cool thing is
gonna...
that they're going to keep making them, Hannah, because they've already introduced or shown us the 2025 Blackwings.
They're going to make 12 of them a year. That's
please
great.
Keep doing 12
it. 12 for the 12 of you that want them. I've mentioned this before, but I am looking forward to driving the Celestiq in September. So, and that's their Rolls-Royce competitor.
Yeah, it's like a $300,000 Cadillac, right?
Yeah, I look forward to that. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. All right, very cool. And then finally, the E-Class, which we teased, so we should talk about. So what's the deal? You're driving currently this new E-Class, right? So you're driving it around,
yes.
Back and forth to work,
yes.
Taking it on a joyride.
Yes.
Are you doing anything special?
No, this is daily life. This is not, you know, this is a mass car. This is something that is a luxury item, but it's sort of mass luxury. I drove the E450 4MATIC. This is the new 11th generation of the E-Class. So it's the next generation and introduces a lot of new technology into the lineup. Mercedes typically does use the E-Class to launch a lot of new tech. So we've got, you know, a completely redesigned exterior with a new front grille. There are a lot of new designs on the exterior front and back, like the tri-Mercedes star are like all over the car now, in the grille and the rear taillights. There are star motifs sort of everywhere. They've done things like added a standard panoramic sunroof. The front seats are now heated and memory as standard. So, you know, it's upgrades like that. The car doesn't look radically different. If you've seen one class, you could probably identify the other ones. But this just has basically the new MBUX system, which is Mercedes entertainment system. It's
love
got
it.
It's just new. It's all
it.
Upgraded. It's all new.
And I'm guessing it, if it's a 450, I don't know how safe of a guess this is, but to me, that means it's got a 3-liter inline six, and since it's the new one, it probably is a hybrid with a 48-volt system.
Probably.
Yes. Okay. By the way, one debate that I've gotten into online, and people feel very passionately about this.
Okay.
When I got my GLS 450 4MATIC, I got the light up star on the front, so the Mercedes emblem actually lights up, and a lot of people. Interestingly to me, on the MB World, you know, Mercedes-Benz forum, are very much against that because they think it looks gaudy. It's too opulent.
Mm-hmm.
They think you're bragging that if your emblem lights up, that's too much. Now, frankly, I mean, you've got the emblem on your car, and if you're driving in daylight, people are going to see it as well. I think it's a little bit silly. I like a light up emblem. I think it's cool.
Sure.
Whether it's on a GMC or a Mercedes or, you know, any other vehicle, and you're starting to see them a lot more. I just like the way it looks.
Yeah, I'm not bothered by it. You know, I've definitely been in some of the higher end Mercedes where the inside feels kind of like a nightclub in Eastern Europe in the 90s, where it's just a bunch of lights and like ambient lighting and light strips in the top and the doors, and it's like a little too much. So that I love less, but I'm not bothered by a light up, single light up emblem. I think that's fine. I mean, I think it would look killer on a G-Wagon, for instance. If you go big, you might as well go really big.
And they've been doing big stars forever, right? Like, I think the Gullwing, the old Gullwing Mercedes, had a giant emblem on front as well.
Yeah. I mean, this is not really new. I mean, hey, Rolls-Royce has Spirit of Ecstasy hood ornaments that will glow from the inside. If you want to talk opulence, obviously that's a Rolls-Royce, but you know, this is not a new idea. People have been doing this forever.
But they're doing it more. Like BMW, when I test drove the XM, they had light up kidneys up front. And now I noticed the other day I went online to build a new BMW X6 because I was test driving one and I fell in love with it. Absolutely loved it. You can do the light up kidneys on the new X5 and X6 as well. So it's coming to the rest of their vehicles.
Yeah, especially if you're a fan of the whole kidney things. You know, now we just saw this new BMW concept, their Vision Class concept launched last week, and those kidneys on that thing, this is their like electric SUV, are small.
Too small.
So they've gone back. They're pretty small.
I mean, I like the big rabbit teeth.
You like the, yeah, okay. So, I mean, they're kind of all over the place with the kidneys anyway. Yeah. Might as well light them up.
Yeah.
go for it. Have fun.
I feel like part of it is that everyone else hates it. It makes me like the big, giant kidneys.
Of course.
And that's the same with the X6. Like, of course, the X5 makes a lot more sense. And the X6 is essentially the same car, but just less practical and $10,000 more.
Yeah.
But I like that no one likes it. You know,
I can get on board with that. I do like sort of a contrarian attitude at times, which is maybe why we can agree on the G class. You know what? Like, there's something that just feels great about being a little obnoxious.
The bad guy, kind of, you know?
Yeah. And I do want to say one quick thing. I have to correct something from last week. I felt a little bit bad. I mentioned my dad, and I said that he didn't know anything about cars. And,
and he listened, and he was like, Hannah, what are you talking about?
He did listen, but he didn't mention that. But when he told me he listened, then I was like, oh no. I said he didn't know anything about cars, and he knows plenty. He's the one who taught me how to drive a stick, and he certainly knows how to do routine maintenance on his old trucks. He's had a bunch of old Ford and Chevy trucks. So I just want to say, sorry about that, Dad. You do know a lot, and I really am grateful for you teaching me how to drive. And he didn't ask me to say this. This is just me. I felt a little bit bad about
that. I think it's good that you include it. Respect
to your
dad.
Yeah, he does know plenty. He's just not a car guy, and he would certainly agree with that.
Well, maybe we'll have him on the podcast someday. And a belated happy birthday to your dad
happy 70th.
Well, that does it for this week. That's all we got time for. Join us again next week, same time, same place. I'm Matt Miller.
And I'm Hannah Elliott. And this is Bloomberg.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.